Welcome to Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations. Que voy a hacer, je ne sais pas. Que voy a hacer, je ne sais plus. Que voy a hacer, je suis perdu. Today on your show, career management insights and job search tips and techniques from two of North America's most respected career thought leaders. Hi, I'm Mark Franklin, practice leader of a team of professional career counselors at CareerCycles.com, a career management social enterprise. I'm pleased to be your host today on Career Buzz. Thanks for tuning in this morning. Wendy Enelo is co-founder and director of the Career Thought Leaders Consortium and the Resume Writing Academy. She works with transitioning executives through her private practice. Wendy's authored more than 25 books on resumes, cover letters, keywords, interviewing, and job search, including best resumes for $100,000 plus jobs. She speaks regularly on career topics. She's been quoted in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and Time Magazine. Wendy's a true innovator in the industry. She hosts conferences, training programs, and career brainstorming events in the U.S., Canada, and the U.K. Together with Wendy, Louise Kurzmark is executive director of Career Thought Leaders Consortium and the Resume Writing Academy. Louise works with transitioning executives through her private practice, Best Impression Career Services. Louise is the author of 20 books on resume writing, interviewing, and job search, is a six-time Best Resume Award winner, and a frequent speaker on career topics. While I'd been on their email list for a few years, I finally met Louise and Wendy at the National Career Development Conference in Atlanta, Georgia this past June. It was a real delight to exchange ideas with them after seeing them in my inbox for years. Louise Kurzmark joins me live by phone from Reading, Massachusetts. Welcome, Louise.
Hello, Mark. Thank you.
And Wendy Enelo joins me live by phone from Coleman Falls, Virginia. Welcome, Wendy, to Career Buzz.
Hi, Mark.
I'm looking forward to talking to the two of you about career tips and techniques, but first I'd like to get a bit of your career stories. Wendy, first of all, what do you like about your career?
Oh, I love everything about my career. Well, just about everything. There would be a few administrative tasks I'd leave behind. What do I love most? Every day of my life, I have the opportunity to positively impact the lives of other people. I'm a do-gooder at heart.
So it's a real helping professionals role. And what are your strengths? What do you bring to this job in terms of your skills and strengths?
Well, I've always said that my occupational instinct, or what I was destined to do, was to be a writer, because I've written since I was a young child. I just love, love, love words. It took me until my early 20s to figure out how I was going to be able to do that, or that I had never even heard of professional resume writers back in the 1970s, let alone career coaching, which is such a novel or something so new within the last decade or so. You want me to tell you a minute about how I got into resume writing?
Yeah, no, I was curious about the strengths, though. It sounds like you're a writer. Let me hear from you, Louise. Louise Kurzmark, what do you like about your career?
Well, like Wendy, my occupational instinct is as a writer, and it's so interesting to think back now that I'm in a profession where I help other people figure out where they want to go, what they want to do, what is their destiny in their careers. And I did absolutely none of that when I was young. As a matter of fact, when I was in high school and going into college, I didn't even know there was a category of profession like a business writer. I knew I loved to write. I know I didn't want to be a novelist, and I didn't want to be a journalist. So what was left? So I had no idea what to do and really fell into everything that I've ever done. And it was not until, 20 years later that I finally figured out, yes, this is what I want to do, and this is how I'm going to go forward with it. So came very, very late to the concept of career planning. But as I look back, what I do now and what I love to do closely matches what I always loved to do and always wanted to do and always have done well. So I don't think you can hide from your instincts. I think you can, disguise them in your own mind, but they're going to come through anyway.
That's a nice way of putting it. You can't hide from your instincts. So, Louise, how did you then get into this field? I know you've done a number of things prior to getting into this world of working as a career professional. What led you into this field in your story?
Entirely accidental. I was had been working in the public relations department at an insurance company, got married, and was going to have a baby, and knew I did not want to go back to work in an office. This is my entire motivation for starting my own business. I said, well, let me give it a year. I want to stay home with my baby. If it doesn't work out, I can always get a job. And that's always been my fallback plan. If this doesn't work out, here I am 33 years later. I think it's working out pretty well. But I liked having that I can always get a job mindset. So I decided to start a business, and I was doing minor document editing, typing in those days. I was helping salespeople with their presentations and proposals, and just did a lot of administrative and writing, editing stuff throughout probably the first 10 years, always doing resume editing as a sideline. And then finally, in I think 1995, I had to make a decision about where I was going to go with my career because my husband was transferred. So I was moving, and of course that was before we had what we have now, which are portable businesses, portable skills. I can work anywhere, but in those days I couldn't. My business was local. So I had to decide what I wanted to do with my life, and at that point I said, you know, this resume thing is exactly what I love. It's the best use of my talent. It's a great way, a great business to run on so many different levels and offer so many opportunities. It gives me a chance to use those skills that I really love to use, and that's what I'm going to do. And interestingly, that's when my career really took off, when I started writing, when I started really reaching the pinnacle of the profession. That's when I started working with Wendy and doing, you know, even more expanding things that we were doing. So very accidental.
It's a fascinating story. People claim that their careers are accidental. We've heard so many stories of luck and accident on Career Buzz. But it does sound like there was some intentional navigation, even though you didn't have the idea from the get-go. You did navigate and you continued to find ways to utilize your strength, which sounds like it was really in the area of writing.
Exactly.
We like to connect the dots here on the show here, and it's interesting to hear what people have studied in post-secondary and how that led them into their career. What did you study post-secondary?
I studied business for 2 years, and then I went to work and studied English for 5 years, additionally part-time, and that's been my entire academic career.
If you could name two or three things that you got out of your undergraduate education that you actually use in the world of work, what would those things be?
Interesting. I would have to say the business skills that I got. In other words, really, this is old school, but the secretarial skills, how to put documents together, how to manage the process of creating paper that we do every day. Those are really fundamental skills to what I do, even though they're not very glamorous or exciting, but they really are bedrock. So I'm glad that I learned those. I loved in my English studies, I absolutely loved reading, talking about, exploring, thinking about literature, fiction, nonfiction, and really analyzing the written word and figuring out the message of the written word, and being able to talk about that or write about that in my schoolwork. The written word, I also was pretty fluent in French, so I was studying the French written word and how it differed from the English written word and that kind of thing. So that analytical skill and that real deep immersion into language is something that I think has been valuable.
Great. Thanks for sharing that. It's so important as if there's post-secondary education students or recent grads listening to hear that there are valuable skills that emerge from an undergraduate experience and that those can be really applicable in the real world. Wendy Enelow, on your end, I saw on your website when I was doing a little research that one of the first things you did that brought you into the world of career profession was writing the resume for the Economic Minister of Kenya. Now, how did that come about?
I rented an apartment from a woman who owned a resume business. And again, this goes back to about the middle 1970s. And she owned a resume business. She still does. She's actually the world's expert in federal resume writing. Her name is Catherine Troutman, and she owns the Resume Place in Washington, D.C. But I rented an apartment from her. Now, I always knew that I would never have a 9-to-5 job. I lived a very, very transient and wonderful childhood, lived abroad, had lots of different opportunities. But always knew I'd never do a 9-to-5 thing. So I was in college. I had a small word for those of you who are 50 plus years of age, I had a small word processing business where we used Videx and Mag cards and all of this technology that now is, you know, a dinosaur. And, so was doing that part time, was going to school, and I rented an apartment from Kathy. And she said, oh, you do some writing on the side? Do you want to write a resume project? And it was good money. I'm like, okay, I'll give it a shot. And she handed me this pile and said, here. And it was the economic minister of Nairobi, Kenya. And I thought, wow, I'm so unqualified to do this. So I spent probably a week researching, did a resume. He loved it. I was hooked.
Well, it's a great story. It's so funny how sometimes, you know, the work that gets thrown to us, a project or something that kind of gets falls onto our plate, it helps us reveal our own strengths and what we actually like. Do you remember the moment? Do you remember thinking, you just said you were hooked. What was it about that project or that experience that made you feel like you were in the zone or in the flow or you know, really utilizing your strengths in a great way?
Well, just like Louise, I really love words. So I have that whole writer part of me. I also really liked that with resume writing, it's writing to sell. You know, you have this product that you kind of have to package and position in such a way that it's attractive to the buying audience. And I've always been very entrepreneurial, so I like that whole sales side of it. And resume writing merges those two, your love of writing and your ability to merchandise and be able to, by using words, I can create the perception that I want you to see. When you're writing resumes, it has to be, well, in the realm of reality. But words are very powerful. They create perception. So I liked that a lot. And then you get to work with such a wide range of clients. You go from the economic minister of Nairobi to a graduating student to a manufacturing and logistics guy in Michigan to, you know, all clients all over the world, and every day is different. So for people who kind of have that entrepreneurial bent, that's a wonderful thing.
Yes.
Every day of my life for decades has been different. Even though some of it is the same, people will say, wow, how can you write resumes for 30 years? Well, every day is different. Every client is different. Plus, I call myself a serial entrepreneur. Louise refers to herself as a reluctant entrepreneur because we're always doing new businesses and new projects, and I always have all these ideas I want to do. So a lot of it, for those of you who are listening and you're looking at entrepreneurial career paths, you know, remember the fact that you get to do what you love half of the time, and the other half of the time you have to market and build your business. So again, there's that whole marketing thing coming through. You market people on paper. I market myself when I'm marketing my business. But I have a clinical psych degree.
So that's part of your story, linking the clinical psych now to working with people there. What's one or two things that you got out of that clinical psych degree that you use on a regular basis in your work?
I don't know. I was thinking about that question. It certainly wasn't learning how to do R coefficient.
Yes.
And probability and statistics. I would have to think about it. I guess it was all just learning interpersonal relationships, and how to manage those and make everybody feel special. A lot of what I learned in school, to be honest, I use more in my personal life, like all of my biopsychology classes and my love of animals. And so there were things, but it's more personal than professional.
Yes. We're talking here to Wendy Enelow and Louise Kurzmark. They are the directors of the Career Thought Leaders Consortium and the Resume Writing Academy here on Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, 89.5 FM in Toronto and worldwide, CIUT.FM. Now, Louise and Wendy, it's so much more than resumes these days about being successful in a job search, and a lot of listeners want to build that career management skill. Arguably, it's one of the most important 21st century skills. So I'd like to talk to both of you a little bit about the clients that you help and then what those clients are wanting and, by extension, what sort of tips and techniques we can share with listeners. So, and as I talk to you, I'd like listeners to know that they can send a question in to ask Louise or Wendy. You can email that to me and I can bring your questions on the air. If you just want to send an email to Mark with a K, Mark@careercycles.com, and I'll bring the questions up on the air. So first of all, Louise, what kinds of clients are you seeing? Are they employed? Are they in transition? Are they, executive or mid-level? Are there long-term unemployed clients, recent grads? What are the range of clients you work with?
Well, I work in my practice only with senior executives, and that's been by design and by evolution. As a solo entrepreneur, I have, 40, 50, 60, 70 hours a week that I can work on, not more than that. So at some point, it's important, I think, for an entrepreneur to think, what do you do best? What do I really want to do? What are my talents and strengths? And where's the best reward for my work? So a number of years ago, I narrowed the focus of my private practice to just executives. Now, as you mentioned, Wendy and I both do a whole lot of other things. So we have just a small amount of time for working with individual clients right now because we're involved in a lot of training and leadership in the industry. So what I'm seeing in that executive cohort would be typically someone who is employed or recently unemployed. When they come to me, they're generally very early in their search, if they've even begun searching. I don't have a lot of people who are the long-term unemployed because I'm not in the coaching business or the counseling business. I don't. I do a small amount of career guidance and consulting, but I'm not generally in a long-term, months-long relationship with them through that coaching and counseling process. So they typically are coming to me ready to make their next move or forced to make their next move, and they want great marketing documents, very transactional in terms of what I do with them. I have wonderful clients, great relationships, but not typically over months and months. I do have recurring clients, many of those who come back to me as they make each career move. So I'm not seeing a lot of the people who are really struggling with a high unemployment rate or with a really challenging career transition just because of the nature of my business. But I see a lot of that through my many contacts with other resume writers, career coaches, and counselors through all the other things that we do, but not personally.
And what, for your clients, what challenges are they facing? Is it trying to, get over the hump of being able to really articulate their story better and therefore get interviews? Is it low confidence? Is it getting offers? What are the challenges they're facing?
Generally, it is that. It's that interview piece, that resume interview, getting in the door. They're all really confident that they can interview well. Now, they're not always accurate about that, but
yes,
they always tend to think that they can. So I don't necessarily tend to see a lot of, as I said, people who are struggling with the stages when they come to me. But they want to get the piece. They want to get the message. They want to get the story straight so that they have really compelling messages, great documents, and then they can go out. And whether they know it when they come to me, they certainly know it after they've been to me. They have to do more than just, as some of them say, I'm going to contact a few headhunters, or I'm going to look online, or I'm going to put my profile up on LinkedIn. They know they have to do more than that through a targeted job search, and I do give them some general guidance for that, so they're ready to roll with that when they're through working with me.
Right, so it sounds like there's two parts to that. There's the getting one's story straight, as you put it, and then there's all the different ways to be proactive and not just reactive or passive in your job search.
Exactly.
So, Wendy, for you and your clients, where do you recommend job seekers start? Is it this sort of self-clarity? Is it the stepping back? Who am I? What am I good at? What do I want? What are my skills here? Or is it, let's scan what's out there and see where I might fit and then try and craft my story to meet what the employers are looking for?
Oh, it's those items and 100 other things. It also depends where you are in your career. If you're getting ready to go into college, yes, you should look to see what markets are doing well, what industries, what professions. One of the best websites in the world is I'm talking to a Canadian audience. One of the best U.S. websites is the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, BLS.gov. And it tells you what industries are expected to increase. And so if you're young, or even if you're in career transition, age 25, 35, 45, you obviously want to try to focus your search within industries and professions that are on the rise versus the decline.
Right. One of the sites for Canadian listeners that's the equivalent of that is the Working in Canada site. It's a similar site. It's a government site. And, it's the governments, I guess, of both the U.S. and Canada trying to look into their crystal balls and say, you know, what industries are growing and ascending, and where will the jobs be, and which ones are declining? I know in the U.S. you have the O-Net site that's also very good, and in Canada there's a lot of occupational exploration sites, including the government of Alberta, the ALIS, A-L-I-S site. But I think the equivalent of what you just said, Wendy, would be working in Canada. If listeners want to Google that, you'll find that site. So,
I was going to say, you know, it's important if you're young and planning your career that you be wise about it and look in markets that have opportunities. You know, you want to have clarity about, you know, you're going to work. If you're 20 years old, you should expect to be working, you know, for the next 40 plus years. You want to do something that you love and that you're passionate about, and hopefully you'll be fortunate enough to be able to do that. So look at where the opportunities are. It's different if you're 55 and looking for work.
Yes.
You know, the whole, then you're not probably going to do this huge exploration. You already, most people, not everyone, but most people that we work with have clarity about who they are.
So let's use that as a starting point. For sure, there are people who aren't that clear yet, and I think it's a strong piece of advice from any career professional to get that clarity, to go through your story, to understand who you are and where the connections are between your skills and interests in the world of work. Certainly, it's what I think many career professionals do, and that's what our team at Career Cycles does. But let's say that somebody has that clarity, and they have in front of them a kind of, if not a specific job, then at least a job title or an industry of interest. And let's say they're now ready and they really want to find that job. And let's take it from that point. And then, you know, I guess everybody knows we have traditional job search. You find job postings and you reply. But then there's all this non-traditional approach to job search. And I think more and more with the use of social media, people are starting to clue into these other possibilities. We had a guy on Career Buzz who was all about the guerrilla job search, you know, and ways to find companies and make contacts. What advice, Wendy, do you have about that non-traditional job search of identifying companies, finding contacts, trying to meet with people before they start to do the responding to job postings?
Okay, first of all, can I share a few different ideas? Number one, one of the most important reasons for getting a resume done is then you have clarity about exactly who you are. And when someone says to you, well, tell me about yourself, Mark, you know exactly what to say. So, you know, for those of you who are thinking about working with a professional resume writer or career counselor, the single, yes, you get a great resume, but you know what? More important than that, you know how to communicate who you are. That's step one. You can't look for an opportunity or a job if you don't know who you are. You know, we talk so much about everything that has changed in job search, but there is so much that hasn't changed, and that would be networking. How we network is very, very different because of all the technology tools, but it all comes down to networking. Who do you know that's going to know somebody? Because the most important thing about networking, and I'll talk in a minute about different tools for that, it's not who, if I know Amy, it's not who Amy knows, or excuse me, it's not Amy who's going to have an opportunity or know of something. What I want to know is who Amy knows. It's those second degree and those third degree connections where you'll find some job action. So networking is all about asking for help. You know, sharing ideas, you know, asking who might you know that would look for somebody with my qualifications. And for those of you, if your job search is confined to your local geography, you live in Toronto and you're looking for an opportunity in Toronto, how you manage that search is going to be very different than if you live in Toronto and you'd be willing to relocate wherever. Those will dictate what social media tools you use. It'll dictate how much one, you know, local market networking you want to do, because there still are, believe it or not, people still get together and do one-on-one networking in job clubs and things that you might think, wow, that's so archaic. But it's not, particularly if you're looking to stay in your local market. Job search is not just about uploading your resume randomly here, there, and everywhere and expecting that something great is going to happen.
Right. So it's very much about that proactive approach, that we want to really find what we want and ideally connect with people so that we can meet them. I mean, you're saying face-to-face opportunities, and I think that's one of the key tools, the key ways that social media can help us, not so much to connect, but then to find a way to meet with somebody. So it's interesting. It relegates the resume to something that might not be the first thing that people lead with, but something that they leave behind as an after the I've met you tool. So how do you position that with your clients? Louise, if I can get your perspective on that, using the resume either as the leading tool or this other non-traditional approach, meeting people and then using it as the leave behind.
I think it's a great approach because what you're doing is you're using the resume not as the first introduction. And no matter how great a resume is, it's a lot harder for it to make the impact that a personal referral or an in-person meeting can make, because it is just a piece of paper or two pieces of paper. So I think that the more you do to research opportunities, connect directly with people, as Wendy said, use your network to find who do I know at that company, have a conversation, learn about the job, learn about the company, learn about the people who work there, and then when you come in, you are a much more educated potential employee. You're going to stand out from the crowd because you're not just a piece of paper, and the resume supports everything that you've said in all of your messages. Everything needs to be congruent and consistent with your resume, your messages, your networking approach, your LinkedIn profile. They all need to be sending that same message, but that's leading with the resume. Sometimes you have to do it, but if you don't have to do it, you can do a personal introduction first. It is much more powerful.
And just back to one thing you said there, and you went over it really quickly, but I find that that's a challenge for people. You made the suggestion of finding people at companies that you're interested in and trying to connect with them and talk to them. I mean, that, of course, is a great piece of advice. It's tricky to do. People don't know how to do that. We do have this tool called LinkedIn that almost every professional is on now. More and more people are getting on it. So what do you recommend if somebody has a company X who they're interested in and they say, okay, I'd love to work at that company. They're just opening up shop here in the Greater Toronto area or wherever they are. And you think, I'd love to talk to somebody who works in that company so that I can build that relationship. What advice do you have for them?
Well, I think that LinkedIn is a really great tool just for that purpose, because it lets you see who works at a particular company. And then it lets you see who you know, who knows somebody who works at that company. So you can explore the degrees of separation between you and your target. That sounds kind of military, but, you know, we'll use that terminology. So you figure out that you want to meet with John, who works at XYZ company, and you know Alice, who knows John. That's an easy connection. You contact Alice and you say, hey, I'm really interested in this company. Would you mind introducing me to John? And then when you talk to John, and you can do that through multiple steps. It doesn't have to be just one step away. When you talk to John, it can't be, John, I'm applying for a job at your company. Can you help me? Because John doesn't know you. He doesn't know anything about you. It has to be a request for information. John, I'm really interested in your company. I wonder if you would spare a few minutes. I'll take you for a cup of coffee. Talk to me about your job and what you like about working there. Because your purpose is to build a relationship and to gather information so that you can make informed choices. And those kinds of conversations and meetings will lead further to, so-and-so, you should talk to Mark, you should talk to Mary in accounting if you're interested in this job. Those kind of referrals will develop. Anytime you see a job, a posted job, as opposed to just one of my friends calls it throwing the resume over the wall and not knowing where it's landing, he always makes an attempt to find a connection at that company. He doesn't apply for that job until he reaches out, makes the connection, figures out what's his best strategy for appealing to that company, who can he have speak for him at that company, and makes the connection, and then he'll send the resume, maybe entering the process at that point. So you know what, Mark, it takes a lot more work to do it that way. It's not as simple as zapping out your resume, but it is a lot more effective, and in the end, it's a lot more satisfying because you're going to have real connections, real conversations, and be able to talk to people about their jobs, about the possibility of your career, as opposed to just sitting at your computer and applying blindly.
Right. That's the 5 seconds of hope followed by the 2 weeks of anxiety approach. Right.
Yes.
We're talking to Louise Kurzmark and Wendy Enlow. They're co-founders of Career Thought Leaders Consortium and the Resume Writing Academy here on Career Buzz on CIUT 89.5 FM and worldwide on CIUT.FM. We're going to take a brief break for some music and station ID. We'll be right back. And I want to really then move into some specific tips, techniques, advice on resumes, cover letters, LinkedIn profiles. So stay tuned. We're going to hear from Feist, Get It Wrong, Get It Right.
From the roots up, CIUT 89.5 FM, presenting the history and evolution of sound for 25 years and counting. CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto.
And we're back at Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, from Career Cycles, practice leader of a team of career professionals at careercycles.com. And before continuing on with our interviews, I want to let listeners know about the amazing archive of Career Buzz stories and inspiring interviews. You can click the Career Buzz button at careercycles.com. You can hear insights from the recent Canadian Positive Psychology Association's conference that was held in Toronto in the summer. We had a recent interview with two couples who work together and what that's like to live and work together in your career and life, and most recently, Farming 2.0, how many young Canadians are finishing post-secondary education and doing something quite different, farming, when we had two recent interviewees who talked about their transition into something that they never thought they would do. So look for Farming 2.0 on the careercycles.com site. We've been talking to Wendy Enlow and Louise Kurzmark, co-founders of Career Thought Leaders Consortium and the Resume Writing Academy, and we're we're going to move our interview into something that I think many listeners are really interested in, some of the practicalities of resumes, of letters, of LinkedIn profiles, of online applicant tracking systems, something that many people are quite familiar with, but they may not know the ins and outs of it. So, Wendy, can I come back to you, first of all, and talk about the mix of things now? First of all, we have resumes, we have LinkedIn profiles, we have these applicant systems where you have to put in all that data and online applications. How should people be thinking of this? Should they start with the resume or should they start with the LinkedIn profile? Where should they begin when they're trying to put together their documents?
I always think that the resume is a really good foundational element upon which everything else can be built. And I think it's important to note that it's not only LinkedIn, but that there are other social media tools, believe it or not, Facebook also, and Twitter can be valuable tools in your job search. But again, Louise and I warn people, don't think that technology is the sole answer. The most important thing to remember about job search is that it needs to be multi-channel. You're going to use all these different tools, you know, responding to job postings and local networking and LinkedIn networking and reading blogs and posting to blogs. And there's a lot of outbound things you can do. You know, for those of you relocating, you're going to have a lot of it is going to be remote. It's not going to be all this in-person stuff. Each of these channels, some of them will require different quote-unquote documents. So I think it's easiest for everyone generally to start with the resume and immediately do a LinkedIn profile. A recruiter said to me months and months ago, if someone's not on LinkedIn, they don't exist. So it doesn't matter age, occupation, whatever. You need to be on LinkedIn. And creating a LinkedIn profile is not simply copying and pasting your resume. A LinkedIn profile, in many ways, is much more than just a resume. And you'll see as you explore building your profiles.
Yeah, in fact, we had a LinkedIn expert, a woman who actually works at LinkedIn Canada, Danielle Restivo. She's actually in the Career Buzz archive also and talked a lot about how to optimize your LinkedIn profile. It's interesting what you say about the recruiter who said you don't exist. I mean, it's kind of scary to think about that, but, you know, how much do you have to exist? Like, if a recruiter were to receive a resume in response to a posting or whatever, and then they say, okay, well, let me see if this person is on LinkedIn, and what are they going to do if they find that you're not there? Are they going to disregard you? Or even if you are there but you have a minimal profile, is that worse than having no profile at all?
To some degree, it depends on how old you are. If we're talking about young graduating students, it wouldn't be a major crisis if you weren't there, but we don't recommend you not be there. It's important for everybody. But, you know, if you were a 35-year-old, you know, sales associate with no online visibility, you're going to have a tough road to hoe in your job search. Very, very difficult. You know, how minimal? We like things that are content rich and keyword rich. You know, keywords, as we all know, are the foundation for these ATS, applicant tracking systems. They search via keywords. You know, it's important to remember that keywords are not just words related to a specific profession. For example, for those of you in sales, keywords might be things like account management or territory management or new product launch. So they're words related to your industry. But keywords can also be locations. A company is only hiring somebody that lives in Toronto. So if you have something, you know, other than Toronto, you're not going to get pulled out of that system. Keywords can be the names of colleges and universities. Keyword searches can be based on degrees. I'm only looking for candidates that have an MBA, or I'm only looking for candidates that went to McGill, or whatever. So keywords and making your resume and your LinkedIn profile and even your Twitter profile, that I think is, I don't know how long it is, that short little paragraph.
It's pretty short.
Yeah, very short. You want to make sure they all resonate the same message, the same brand, but that they are all a appropriately keyword rich.
And just to pick up on that one, you know, keywords are important. We scan postings to look at what the employer says that they want, and we try and get this sort of list of keywords. And I like what you're saying. It's not just the technical things, you know, their Java programmer or something, but it's also things like project management or just terms. Do we put that at the bottom of the resume in a section called keywords, or do we try and sprinkle those keywords throughout the resume into the actual content?
The latter, sprinkle throughout the content generally. You know, it's not bad. Actually, we use that format often where at the top of a resume we'll include keyword, you know, like two little columns of keywords or keyword phrases. But keywords generally would just naturally be integrated into the writing. If you worked in manufacturing, let's say in purchasing, you probably have experience in logistics and supply chain management. So those kinds of things just kind of naturally get interwoven into the text. But you can do sections, but they don't have to be separated. You can do that lovely career summary at the beginning with a little paragraph and perhaps two columns of keywords. And that's a great way to start your resume because it very clearly communicates this is who I am and the value that I bring.
Let me pick up on that top part of the resume, because I think a lot of people have questions on that. And Louise Kurzmark, I was looking on your site at a few samples that you had some interesting sample resumes. People often wonder about that profile section or overview or summary and whether it's worth it or not. Sometimes I look at resumes and they have that and I find that they're very generic and lame, and I think that they're not worth the trouble. But they can be effective. So what should we put up there in that profile section? Should it be a block of text, or should it be bullet points? Should it be quantitative? Should we put like a summary phrase that gives us in three or four words the who we are piece? And like Wendy is saying, should we have that kind of list of keywords in there or not? Louise, what's your perspective on that profile?
Okay, well, I think your profile can be whatever you want it to be. There's no formula for it. So for me to tell you, you must have a headline and a paragraph and keywords would be a mistake for some people. For some people, it's the right solution, but I never like to prescribe exactly do this, don't do that. The interesting thing about the profile section is when they came into vogue, and this is, you know, decades ago now, everyone would read them avidly because they were unusual. And then they evolved into every section, every resume has a summary profile section, and they became generic so that people, as you said, they're writing things in there, you know, expert such and such with a 3-year track record of doing this and that and strong skills and this, that, and the other thing. It becomes generic and not memorable. And people will skip right over that because what they want to know is who are you, where have you been, and what have you done? And, of course, what can you do for me? So I like to create a profile section that is unique to the individual. I do like to use a headline, so it tells me right at the top, accounting professional, field sales manager. If you can put a job title up there instead of the word like summary, which is relatively meaningless, I think that makes a stronger and more immediate impact. And then you might use subheadings to further define specific areas of expertise. Below that, you might have a short paragraph. You might have a couple of bullet points. I think it's wise to include specifics. I like to call them the wow achievements. I want to put up there something that is a wow, you know, rose to number one sales rep in territory or doubled, sales revenues in such and such a year. If you can have two or three of those one-line wows up at the top that are explained in more detail in the experience section, that makes the resume unique to you and it makes it interesting to read. So that's generally what I like to do is look at some high points, but never follow a formula because there's so many different things you could put up there and so many different ways you might present it.
Yes.
You've got to look at what's distinguishing about you. I love your idea, Mark, of the tagline, the branding statement, if you will, a few words up there that describe your approach, your style, what makes you different. I think that's a great idea and a good distinguishing feature, as long as you can get something up there that's meaningful and that is distinctive.
Yes, and I noticed also, Louise, on a couple of your resumes, and I've seen this with some of our clients, you actually had a testimonial or a recommendation in italics, you know, so-and-so said, gee, Louise walks on water, you know, signed the sales manager. And putting that testimonial right there in the profile, what's your opinion on doing that?
I think a testimonial testimonial is so powerful because it is a third-party endorsement. You're not saying it about yourself. Someone else is saying it about you. Therefore, the implication is that it's more accurate and meaningful. So I think if you have a great testimonial, why not put it on your resume and let others read what others have said about you? I think it's very powerful.
All right.
You have to be careful. You don't want to overdo it. You don't want to look like you're, trying too hard. But there's lots of different ways you can include a testimonial in the resume, in the summary section, below each job. I think it's a great strategy.
Yeah, it was very interesting, and that might be a big idea for some listeners to do that. I think it can be very powerful, and it's certainly an attention grabber. What about the structure? Wendy Enelow, if I can come back to you, the overall resume, people typically use a chronological, reverse chronological resume. They list things that they've done in reverse chronological order. Many people I know have this question about so-called functional or skills-based resumes where you list a skills section and then you put a bunch of bullet points underneath. My impression is that employers don't really like that approach, and so it's better to use this more chronological approach. What's your take on those two different approaches?
I agree with you. 95% of the time, 90% of the time, it is best for most people to use a chronological format, reverse chronological, so you're writing most recent to past. But it depends. Just as Louise was saying, resume writing is not formulaic. Every person is different. So who are you and who do you want to be is what drives the structure of the resume. Now, for most people, you do want to do chronology because that's what an employer wants. However, let's say you haven't worked for 10 years and you're a return to work mom or dad. Doing a chronological resume probably is not going to do yourself any favors. You know, you don't want someone instantly to see that you haven't worked in 10 years. So every situation, consider people who are coming out of jail looking for jobs. You know, if you haven't worked in a long time, a chronological probably or may not work for you. So, you know, there can't be any hard and fast rules. Louise and I always say the only rules about resume writing are that you include your name, your contact information, your work experience, if any, and your education, if any. How you do that depends on who are you and how do you want to be perceived. So if you look at resume books or you go on at websites and look at different resumes, you'll see there's just this wide-ranging portfolio of styles and things you can do to differentiate yourself from every other candidate. Include those bullets and achievements, those wow achievements at the top. So you're not one of many. But you've separated yourself from the pack.
And that is where the rubber hits the road, isn't it? Those bullet points, the thing that you say, that job that I did there between 2009 and 2012, you know, that's where I find that people need the most help, is then being able to articulate in a nicely crafted little bullet point something about what they did to make it really stand out. So what can we say to help listeners craft those bullet points so that they get something that's not a bland summary, but something that really stands out and that pinpoints what they did? What are some tips or ideas on that kind of crisp, tight, sparkling writing?
First thing is, and this will make it easy for everybody, sell it, don't tell it. Don't just tell someone what you did, tell them how well you did it. Now, that doesn't mean that everything has to be quantifiable, because improving organizational efficiency isn't necessarily quantifiable, but don't just write a bullet point that says I did such and such. Rather, tell me the result of doing such and such was.
And when you say result, like should we try and quantify it where possible? You know, improved turnaround time on proposals by 37% for 800 proposals. You know, that kind of numeric quantitative thing. If you can do it, not everything can be quantitative, but how powerful is that?
That's remarkably powerful. And in fact, you can even include small graphs and tables and charts so that not only are you writing content about increasing revenues, you know, 37%, you're also visually demonstrating it as well. So you know how people learn and perceive information differently. It's great to be able to complement as appropriate. And that works great for somebody in sales. It would be ridiculous for somebody who's in nuclear physics.
Yes.
You know, you have to, the resume has to match the audience, so don't everybody think, oh, now we could rush home and put charts on. You know, if you're a... I'm trying to think. There's a million professions, and I can't think of, you know, of one. But, you know, if you're an administrative assistant, you're probably not going to have charts and tables. Or if you're a nurse, I mean, it's just not appropriate. But, yes, quantifiable. But achievements can be just as powerful when they're not quantifiable. And there are many more things that are not quantifiable than there are that are quantifiable.
Absolutely.
So don't feel badly if you, you know, people who work in sales, for example, that's a great profession because everything is quantifiable or a great deal of it. But, you know, training new hires who subsequently went on to be promoted to positions of increased responsibility, that's a great achievement, but
great.
It's not quantifiable.
And that may be a couple of answers there to one of our listeners who did email in. The question was from Janet. Thanks, Janet. What advice do you have to make a resume stand out from others in order to land an interview? So I think, you know, Wendy, as you've been talking about, it's the whole package, but especially where this rubber hits the road, would you say that's one of the key places that people look to make that resume stand out?
I think it's everything. I think it's visual appearance. You know, don't do a resume that's Times Roman, you know, 12 point that looks like the other 300 resumes sitting on somebody's desk.
Uh-huh.
You know, so you want visual distinction. You want distinction in terms of your content. If you can integrate some visual things to make, there's a resume writer that Louise and I know very well who does just magnificent formatting. Some of her resumes are like a work of art. We're all just very impressed with her. Just with a little design like logo in the corner.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, it has to match the person and it has to match the industry that you're targeting. Everything has to be very on brand.
Yes.
So as we talk about all this, everyone listening should take away what's relevant to them and not feel like everything we say is relevant to everybody because it's not. You know, so remember, back to the beginning, sell it, don't tell it.
Right. Thanks. We're talking to Wendy Enelow here and Louise Kurzmark of Career Thought Leaders Consortium here on Career Buzz on CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto and worldwide CIUT.fm. We have about 7 or 8 minutes to go, and there's so many other topics here that I had listed. One of the things about standing out, well, you can do it on a resume, but there's so many other ways that people are applying now. So, for instance, Louise, I wonder if I can come back to you and just ask for any quick tips about the online application systems or applicant tracking systems. So many companies are using this. The job posting is there. People want to try and get through that. Any thoughts on the best ways of doing that?
Sure. Well, first of all, yes, it is the reality of job search that the application system is automated. And even if you do all of these things that we've talked about in terms of reaching out to individuals, at some point you have to enter the system. So you want to make sure that you have the best possible chance of rising to the top of these this theoretical or, I guess, the pile of resumes. So what you need to do, first of all, is have the right keywords, and that needs to be an exact keyword match. So every time you're doing an application, you want to look at the posting and make sure that you have the exact keywords that you can identify from that posting. You want the terms to match 100%. And that might mean you need to do a little bit of rewriting of your resume to make sure you get the terms in there. You can't just have a list at the end with keywords. You do need to integrate them into the resume because the applicant tracking systems are becoming ever more sophisticated, and they're looking not just for terms, but they're looking at how recently did you use that skill, or how often did you mention that particular skill. So they're able to evaluate the depth of experience and not just a keyword, but having an exact match is really important. Another thing is you want to make sure that your resume is easily scannable by the system. And if you have any kind of the lovely enhancements that Wendy talked about, you have a logo or you have a graph, it's not going to work in the system. For best results, you want to convert your resume to plain Jane, plain old text, which is ugly, but it works in that context. So you You write a great resume, you design a beautiful resume, you use that for human eyes, and then you convert it to text for computer eyes. And so you're going to give yourself the best chance of rising to the top.
And it's interesting, right, about the human eyes there. And, you know, sometimes the simplest approach may be the most effective. What about the idea of then putting your resume, you know, printing it on a nice piece of paper, putting it in an envelope, handwriting the address of the person and sending it by snail mail? Any tips or suggestions about doing that?
I think if it works with your style, it can be a really wonderful approach. That's not the only approach you need to take, because your materials need to get into their system, and they can't do that with a piece of paper very easily. But I would say instead of sending a resume in that manner, I would do a handwritten note, or I would do a personal email, or I would pick up the telephone, which a lot of people are afraid to do, and make that personal connection. But just sending a resume by itself in an envelope, it can, you know, kind of break through all the clutter of email. And you certainly might want to give it a try, but I don't know how effective it's going to be as a permanent strategy for all the things that you do, because it's going to be expensive, time-consuming, and will not work for a lot of people. But you do want to look for ways to stand out, and for certain positions, certain companies, that distinctiveness and the beauty of the, you know, the written page can make a difference.
Yes, and to stand out, one of the other things that we hear about are the letters that, you know, sometimes employers read them, sometimes they don't, sometimes they're requested, sometimes they're not. We had a very notable Canadian marketer on the show, Terry O'Reilly. Many Canadian listeners will be familiar with him. He has a national radio show, and I was asking him, he's an employer also and runs a marketing firm, and I asked him about what catches his attention, and he said, a beautifully written letter. He starts with the letter. He loves letters that really talk to him. And if he likes the letter, he'll read the resume. And if he doesn't like the letter, he'll toss the resume. You know, not every employer is going to say that. But, Louise, what's your opinion of really putting some energy into a customized, beautiful letter, as Terry had said?
Well, I think Terry's my kind of guy, because I'm that way myself. I do love letters and words and, you know, the written word. But what I've learned kind of through informal surveys over many years in business is the world is divided into three groups. One-third will never read a cover letter. One-third will read the letter if they like the resume. One-third will always start with the cover letter. So you want to write your cover letter to appeal to those two groups who are going to read it, one if they like the resume and the other is going to read it first. You can't control whether someone is going to read it or not, so you want to make it interesting and vital and relevant and attention-getting so that you do achieve your purpose with the groups that are going to read it.
Yes, and customized, so it's not the one-size-fits-all, because
exactly.
that's the turnoff, right?
Right, except I want to say that I don't think you have to reinvent the wheel every single time. I think you can start with a standard letter that you create that applies for most jobs that you're applying for, and then you can customize it as needed. I mean, it shouldn't be a day's work to get a resume and cover letter out.
Yes, absolutely.
So you need to build some efficiencies into it. But yes, take 10 minutes to look at the posting, to look at the company, to figure out how you can make it personal to them. Don't spend all day doing that.
Right on. We just have a couple of minutes. And Wendy, I want to come back to you and just wrap up. For listeners who are interested either in becoming a career professional or who are career professionals already, I know you have this thing called the Career Thought Leaders Consortium. What's one or two things that might interest people about that and about becoming a career professional?
Thank you. Career Thought Leaders is a think tank for the now, the new, and the next in careers. And so it's not really a professional association, it's a think tank, but we sponsor all kinds of interesting things. First of all, job seekers, go to that website, because there's all kinds of free stuff. There's articles and verb lists. I'll give you two websites where you can go get all kinds of stuff. So careerthoughtleaders.com. For those of you who are career professionals or are interested in pursuing that, you know, Louise and I are kind of biased because we love what we do. One of the things we have coming up is Global Career Brainstorming Day. Every year we host Global Brain Day, where career professionals meet in small groups in the U.S., Canada, and we have an event in London, and they brainstorm best practices and trends In the Now, the New, and the Next in Career.
And there was great material there. I actually saw it on the site. We're going to have to wrap up because we just have a minute left, and we've got our next show lined up. So I want to say thanks so much, Louise Kurzmark and Wendy Enelow. Listeners, check out careerthoughtleaders.com and resumewritingacademy.com. And thank you both so much for joining us here on Career Buzz.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you. You've been listening to Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives.